blogs, you know, the expectation is that, you know, you have to be open and willing to and be, you know, dedicated to an open two-way conversation. You know, not every company is quite ready for that yet. I think there it takes quite a bit of cultural change within a company to truly embrace that and see it as more of an opportunity than a threat.
This is PodTech.net. Welcome to Marketing Voices, featuring the fresh perspectives of innovative marketing leaders and examining how social media is changing marketing throughout the world. Here's your host, Jennifer Jones.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Jones, host of Marketing Voices, a podcast for PodTech. And today's show, we are going to delve into the intersection of social media and corporate communications. We'll be discussing how companies can use social media, such as blogs and podcasts, to build stronger brands and communications programs. And I have a leading expert with me here today on this podcast. His name is Phil Gomes. He's a senior counsel of online communications for Edelman PR. Edelman is a large agency. It's in fact the largest independent agency, public relations agency in the world. And it's about $240 million and about 44 offices strong. They are very expert in the intersection of emerging social media and corporate communications as a firm. So, Phil, welcome to Marketing Voices.
Glad to be here.
So my first question to start out is really as an expert in this whole area of social media, what social media do you really like best today for use in corporate communications work?
I kind of have to blush and chuckle at the term expert. Of course, you know, some of us are, you know, a bit more, you know, spun up and passionate about, you know, social media than others. But as I'm fond of telling everybody, you know, we're all really, you know, in the learning game. I was, you know, messing around with Technorati several months ago, doing, you know, various blog searching, conversation researching, and I was thinking to myself, you know, wouldn't it be great if you could dial up or down what blogs come up in the results in terms of how well-read these blogs are. And 2 weeks later, they came up with something that did exactly that. So things are moving so fast that, I'll gladly inherit the title, the mantle of, you know, expert, I guess, for the purposes of this conversation. But I do stress with people that this is a period of time when we're all in the learning game, and it's really a lot of fun. But as a more direct answer to your question, what social media do I like most when it comes to corporate communications?
And right.
I stress that very advisedly because, of course, that's very different than, perhaps more consumer-y kind of things. I'd have to say, actually, I'm very excited about podcasting. And it's definitely shown in terms of the correspondence that sort of crosses my desktop, both real and virtual.
I have to just interrupt here a second. This was not a setup to all the listeners out there. I really didn't know what his answer was going to be, so I don't want them to think that just because I'm doing a podcast at PodTech that I set you up. So excuse me.
No. I tend to be very extemporaneous, and that's been both a blessing and a curse, I guess, in this business. But in any case, podcasting, actually, because now I know blogs get all the press, right? I mean, I don't believe Business Week did a, you know, breathless cover about podcasting yet, and they certainly did in May of 2005. And of course, you know, podcasting hasn't made the cover of Forbes, and they did their famous, you know, Attack of the Blogs hit piece late last year. But when it comes to podcasting, I'm passionate about it for several reasons. Number one, I spent 4 years in college radio, and those skills had to go somewhere. Enter podcasting, which is great. A lot of companies were like, you know, hey, let's investigate blogs. And it's very easy, I think, for somebody in the agency environment to go like, oh, hey, we'll sell you a blog, sure. That does nobody any good, you know, to use a tool just for the sake of using a tool. So I had developed what I called the Before I Blog checklist, right? The Before I Blog checklist is something that somebody can go down, and if they answer no to any one of the questions, they might consider perhaps another online marketing vehicle. And of course, you know, blogs, you know, the expectation is that, you know, you have to be, you know, open and willing to and be, you know, dedicated to an open two-way conversation. And, you know, not every company is quite ready for that yet. I think there, it takes quite a bit of cultural change within a company to truly embrace that and see it as more of an opportunity than a threat. But when podcasting comes out, right, so think about what you're going to do to this podcast when you piece it together, right? You know, chances are it's going to have some front matter in the beginning. There's going to be some audio production involved, right?
Right.
You know, at the end, there may be some stuff that wraps it up a little bit. You may or may not put music behind it, that sort of thing. And when you talk about podcasts, what tends to happen is that you talk about something that is generally a lot less fly by the seat of your pants than a truly credible blog is. And some companies are absolutely ready to, you know, dump it, you know, jump into the blogosphere with both feet. But for companies that maybe want to experiment a little bit, but are, you know, maybe perhaps you know, a bit gun shy about it, you know, when you look at what goes into podcasting, and it's you know, some editing, and people, you know, very conservative companies like to hear that word.
Yeah.
Editing, production, in some cases, you know, as long as it doesn't come off as too stilted, sometimes even a script helps. I think that is one way that I believe large companies can participate in some form of social media in a way that is comfortable for them.
Great. Well, can you give me some examples then, either with podcasts or also with blogs or maybe wikis or just other forms of communication, in terms of work you've done with companies? You know, I know you don't want to go into a lot of the clients at Edelman and get very specific. We had sort of used that as a caveat up front. But in other situations where you have really seen things work using social media.
One of the examples that I absolutely love bringing up, and this isn't an Edelman client, but it's one that I bring up when I tell companies, both large and small, what perhaps they should aspire to, is ActiveWords software, and the work that Buzz Brueggemann has done. He's the CEO of that company. He's a lawyer turned entrepreneur, and I had seen him speak at a conference, the Blog Business Summit of August 2005. And just sort of, you know, walking me through how, you know, he helped develop very passionate users of the software. And part of it, I think, has to do with the quite generous trial period that ActiveWords offers. It's, you know, 60 days, which is good. I should explain what ActiveWords does. It helps you bind certain keywords to what are otherwise fairly complex processes on a PC. So if I wanted to all at once fire up Microsoft Outlook and send you an email, I might type Jennifer into my computer, and then
right,
boom,
okay.
You know, the brooms from Fantasia,
right,
Sorcerer's Apprentice start working in my computer, and suddenly everything's everything's done, and it's incredibly useful. But it's really interesting in that it feels to me that ActiveWords, you know, they actively search for their own name in the blogosphere and the name of their principals and that sort of thing. You know, I was reading online, and it's pretty tough to find a negative review of ActiveWords. And that has just as much to do with the fact that it's great software, but it also has to do with the fact that they're very serious about what people online are saying, right? And so actually, this is actually borne out. If you go to their website, and there's a section there about you know, what a typical company would normally have about their press clippings and that sort of thing, right? But you click on that, and just kind of show you where their focus is. Blog postings are promoted higher in their look what people are saying about us page than perhaps mainstream media type you know, placements, you know, the likes of.
But to that point, I thought a lot of bloggers hated that when they were actually promoted that way. And They didn't really want to be that. And to the point about, so your whole point in looking at this as a good case study is just the fact of how they used blogging to really promote the product. That's kind of your point here.
That's part of it, right? So, I mean, these are people, of course, they're linking to people on that page who are absolutely passionate about the software and feels that it has solved a very, very important user interface problem with
uh-huh.
it. But also part of it is, as well, the personality that I believe Buzz has, crafted around himself on his blog. He has a personal blog where, he's just as likely to talk about ActiveWords as he is, his latest trip or, whatever. So there's a personality around it, and you want to figure out, okay, well, where's Buzz lately? It's definitely
where's Buzz buzzing?
Exactly. So it's definitely one of my must-read blogs. And Hugh McLeod, who's somewhat famous for his cartoons on the back of business cards, right?
Right.
He has this one cartoon that I blew up to. From business card size to 8.5 by 11, and I stuck on the door of my office. And it says, blogging requires passion and authority, which leaves out most people. And so I stuck that on my door. But you look at somebody like Buzz, and it's like, okay, well, there's passion, there's authority.
So those are two key things. So passion and authority and authenticity that I'm told too in blogging is very important. And I do want to get back to my question, though, about posting blogs on a corporate website that I was told by bloggers that they didn't like that. They felt it was too much like they were promoting the company or promoting a product, that it was viewed that way.
Well, that's a relationship between a company and that blogger, really. I mean, in some cases, I can see where a blogger can say, you know what? By linking to me in that fashion, it would give the reasonable person the presumption that a relationship exists where none might. But I would guarantee you that most companies that would try that are probably quite sensitive to that relationship and would take that on a case by case basis. And the people that they link to who are talking about them are the ones that are, their most fervent fans. Right. I mean, these are people who love the software so much that they'll actively promote it in that fashion. You said the A word, actually, and I want to talk about that. Actually,
authenticity.
This is how this term has been used has changed so much in just the past year alone that it's mm-hmm. actually kind of funny.
And this is with blogs.
Is with anything. This is with anything.
Yeah.
Right. Because what I hear at conferences all the time, and I read in marketing blogs and that sort of thing, is referring to authenticity as just another tactic that can be bolted onto a plan, right? Where you can sit at a conference and actually hear people say things like, "Well, a blog is a good way to create authenticity." Hogwash.
Yeah.
I mean it's really interesting that the way authenticity is described as like a tonic or an elixir or a spice or something that can hypnotize people into loving you. But authenticity, the perception of authenticity, I think is most definitely a desirable result, right? And I think companies want to be perceived as authentic, and I would venture to say most companies, strive to be that way. I know a lot of people might disagree.
Well, I think it's used more in the sense of that the companies don't get a blogger to actually, or a person to ghostwrite a blog, so therefore it's actually the voice of the person. Or if it's a company blog, at least it's the people writing. It's not like all ghostwritten. I at least that's the way I've always assumed it's being used.
Exactly. I mean, nobody wants to be or should aspire to be the next pets.com sock puppet, right? And that's one of the things. Like here at this company, I went on a nationwide tour, right? I kind of have sort of an evangelist role at the company.
At Edelman. Yes.
I've been to almost all of our offices in the U.S. And one of the things that I tell people is that, at least on my watch, ghostwriting is off the table when it comes to Edelman's offerings in this space. And there are two principal reasons for that, I believe. One is that there's that the rule number one in the Hacker's Manifesto is information wants to be free, right? So people who run around making their marketing plans based on whether or not they can quote unquote get away with something, well, they were bad people before and they're worse people now, right? And the idea being that if a blog is ghostwritten, it's going to be found out. Pure and simple.
Right. The assumptions. Right.
It is going to be discovered either through attrition at the company, right? People leaving and telling competitors. Maybe they leave for a competitor. Oh yeah, that blog's ghostwritten.
Yeah.
Word of mouth works, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And also the way we use language identifies us, right? So if let's say one guy is writing like three blogs for three different companies, it's really, really difficult, I think, for one guy to maintain three different voices, right?
Right.
And that person would be... So it's just a bad idea all around.
Okay.
Number one. But number two, and most critically, I don't think an agency should ghostwrite a blog simply because it would have a cascade effect across its entire client base, right?
Right.
So let's say, let's say an agency is representing Widgets Incorporated, and Widgets Incorporated has their blog ghostwritten by, agency XYZ. And it gets exposed that this blog is just basically a sock puppet, inauthentic to the core. And, bloggers know how to research. They know how to use Google, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, so if agency XYZ is ghostwriting this blog, why should I trust any blog from a company that has any relationship whatsoever to agency XYZ?
Right.
And so it has a cascade effect throughout the entire client base. And so for that reason, in this discussion of authenticity, that those are the two reasons why an agency that thinks that they can make piles of money ghostwriting blogs is simply fooling itself.
Yeah. So to that point, like how do you think corporate clients should be thinking about working today with a PR firm? I've heard a lot of people say, well, you probably know Shel Israel of Naked Conversations is saying,
oh, yeah,
look, you don't need a PR firm anymore today. You really don't have to have somebody kind of smiling and dialing, so to speak. So how do you look at usually working with or having a company look at working with a PR firm like Edelman?
When it comes to
social media.
Space,
yeah, definitely. That's what we're talking about here.
I think an agency's primary role in that scenario is helping the client find the voice online and with that expertise, just sort of knowing where all the landmines are, right? Because I tend to think, unfortunately, that when it comes to the topic of, should companies blog?
Yeah.
Frankly, I think far too many people, far too many very loud voices are basically frothing out of both sides of their mouths.
So how do you actually find a voice? I mean, how do you make a company find a voice?
Well, let me finish my point.
Okay.
Let me finish my point. I think there are a lot of people out there who are, I like to describe them as frothing out of both sides of their mouth, right? Because, when a company, a lot of people are running around saying that all companies should blog, or most companies should blog, or a company, quote-unquote, doesn't get it. I hate that term. A company doesn't, quote-unquote, get it unless they're blogging, right? And you hear that all the time, right? But the second a company tries to do that, these same voices are like, oh, look at their blog. I'm going to jump up and down on them for this reason, this reason, this reason, this reason. And it's a completely unproductive conversation, right? So, and I think that's what scares a lot of companies from blogging, perhaps, is that, there's little landmine sort of expectations that that sort of confront companies. And I think part of where an agency can help, and an agency that is intellectually honest about how it and other companies participate in the blogosphere, is when they're counseling clients, just saying, okay, well, if you're really honest of achieving this certain objective in terms of having an honest conversation with these various stakeholders online, then you really have to consider, okay, this is the tool for the job, and it could be any number of tools, and and this is how you do it, and this is the optimal way to do it, and these are very suboptimal ways to do it that we actually avoid, counseling them in that fashion, right? And that over time, along with, again, that passion and authority thing, helping a company identify who their most credible spokesperson, you know, online evangelist is, if they don't already have one, right? And many companies already do. I think that's where an agency can help, on top of whatever interactive services that they provide. Of course, you know, quite a history there.
So that's what you mean about finding their voice, is that whole idea of trying to determine who it is inside the company that sort of has the soul and the culture and in a sense of the company, and they can write about it, talk about it, whatever.
Exactly. And is empowered to do so, right? I mean, because, you know, you can easily get down the road and get to a point where you know, IR sniffs it out, legal sniffs it out, and then unless you heard me say the word empowered, and I'm not saying that in sort of the late 90s management textbook sense. I'm saying that, you know, in a very honest sense, where, you know, you have to say, okay, well, here's a person where you have to make sure that person, that person's every word isn't going to be scrubbed by, you know, 17 different levels of administrivia, right?
Right.
Because, I mean, that's a good way to kill a blog. And actually, you know, you can tell which, you can go to a site and tell that, okay, this post obviously went through, you know, the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe before it, you know, got online.
Right. So, you know, a question in terms of, has come up a lot as I've been talking to people about marketing voices and what we're going to be covering, is what can go wrong with social media? Not so much focusing on blogs, but try to focus maybe on, you know, wikis or podcasts, in terms of, you know, what's the downside of using that kind of social media?
I tend to argue that if you approach it responsibly, there isn't really a downside. I think if one approaches it responsibly, the only conceivable downside is, I think a lot of companies underestimate the time commitment it takes once you initiate that conversation and are honest about continuing it, right?
So, you know, time commitment, how? I mean, in terms of the time it takes to actually do social media?
Yeah, exactly, and to do it credibly. I mean, you know, I tell a lot of people if they, you know, perhaps, you know, launch a blog or whatever, it's like, you know, congratulations, you've reached the starting line.
Right.
You know, you've reached the starting gate. You know, if you look at any one sort of word of mouth, you know, tactic or social media tactic, right, and you look at the deployment of it as your ultimate goal, you've already failed. You know, people need to look at when they enter into these things, you know, the first time, they need to look at it as the starting gate, because and they'll find over time that that's very, very rewarding, and I'd also have to say very very self-regulating, right? A lot of people like to look at the blogosphere as a sort of merciless drumhead court, right?
You know? What does that mean? Merciless drumhead court. What does that mean?
Oh, the idea, you know, summary severe judgments, right, on, you know, companies or people online, right? And people look at it as just sort of this wild, lawless frontier, and actually, you know, it can be that sometimes, and I think that's what makes it kind of fun. But also, you know, I find that you know, people who participate in social media, if you look at the micro communities in there, it's very, very self-regulating, right? It's very self-regulating in that, you know, if somebody gets something wrong, you know, people are sort of quick to, you know, jump up and, you know, and say, no, this, you know, this is right, you know. We did a study with Technorati last fall, let's see, about 820 some odd bloggers filled out our survey.
Wow, that's impressive.
And one of the questions was, what do you do if somebody conclusively tells you that you blogged about something and you got it completely wrong? What is your response, right? And 88% of the bloggers that responded said that they would make the correction fly as high as the original error. And by that, they said things like they'd alter the original post and let you know that they've done so, right?
Yeah.
They would say, oh, there's an update to this post, by the way, I goofed, all right? Some of them would say, I would strike through the error and put the new data on there. Or they said, I would write a completely new post, all right? You know, so all of these are ways by which, the correction flies as high or even higher than the error. I mean, contrast that to, when you get a front page story in the strategically important, Times Journal or whatever, and you get it wrong, right? Well, your only recourse is a postage stamp right next to a Bloomingdale's ad on page 829, right?
Right.
That's an important thing I tell companies. As a matter of fact, something very similar happened to us, actually. Somebody put up a blog post that was actually, it was quite negative towards Edelman. It said something like, Edelman is, the agency that, represents big tobacco, right? And, which was funny because this posting happened like late last year. And we resigned all of our tobacco business in, I think, mid-2001.
Yeah.
Right? We hadn't represented tobacco in a very long time. And our reasons for doing so, I mean, I wasn't there at the time, but I think you can probably guess our reasons for doing so.
Right.
I think it was our chief of staff, I believe, sent the blogger an email saying, well, actually, you got it wrong, and we haven't done this in a while. And as a matter of fact, a good portion of revenue that came from some of that, went to some kind of charity. And this guy, this blogger was happy to put up the correction. In fact, it went up, the guy must have been on his email or something. It went up, almost immediately.
Yeah, that's good. Well, see, that's, to your point, that's exactly why the media is good in that sense. So, I'm conscious here of your time and the time. I have one more question that I want to ask you before we go. So, what do you really recommend as kind of your final thought on who today is the best marketed company in your opinion? It doesn't have to be a technology company. It doesn't have to be a consumer packaged goods company. But I want to make sure that I ask all of my guests on this show who they think is really the most awesome marketed company today.
Wow. you just asked me to tell you the time. I'm about to tell you how to build a watch. Because I'm a graduate student at USC Annenberg, right? I'm getting my master's in
very good
communications
school.
Management.
Yeah.
And first day of class, our professor asked us that question.
Oh, interesting.
I'm going to tell you that story to tell you this one. In any case, what happened was she asked a class of about 30 or 40 people that very same question, right? And the answer that received, the company that received the most votes was Apple Computer.
Yeah, I figured.
Right? Do you want to know who was tied for number two?
Procter & Gamble.
Nope. Axe and Dove.
Unilever, yeah.
Both of which are Edelman clients.
Oh, wow.
I was all too happy to take that to my boss.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But I'll tell you what my vote is.
Apple isn't an Edelman client, is it? Is Apple an Edelman client,
I believe it was at one time.
Oh, wow.
I'd have to go into the archives for that one. I believe it was at one time.
So what was your answer? Was your answer Apple?
No, actually. Oh. Don't get me started on Apple. My answer is actually quite unconventional. Dean Guitars. I'm a guitar player.
Yeah.
And Dean was, a brand that sort of like, flew high and then sort of went into stealth mode and then I guess in sort of mid to late 90s or so started coming back. And because she asked us, what brand are you loyal to beyond all reason? And, me being a guitar player, being a metalhead, being, all these things, I remember my first Dean experience. I got it off of eBay, a 7-string guitar. Listeners who don't know guitars probably don't know that most guitars have 6 strings. Dean made a 7-string guitar, right? And You know, and so based on all the stuff I had been reading about Dean, you know, in magazines like Guitar World and stuff like that, and stuff I'd been reading online, and some of my, a lot of my, they're great at, you know, really leveraging their high profile endorsers, you know, things like that. The late Diamond Darrell from, you know, Damage Plan and Pantera. That, I mean, I just think they do just, you know, a great job, and their presentation is apparently a must see at the, it's called the NAMM show, the North American Music Merchants Show.
Or something. Oh, good.
Like, and the personality they've crafted on the guitars, and they're great instruments. I mean, I love my 7-string to death. So, I mean, that's probably not the, probably an answer you
Yeah, no, but that's good. Well, we'll have to have you back on Marketing Voices here and actually play the guitar as a lead into the show next time.
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to. There's a sample of my playing on one of my old podcasts when I ran a podcast at philgomes.com.
So. Oh, good. Well, that's good. That's a good lead into everyone that wants to contact Phil. He has been nice enough to say that we can do so. His email is phil.gomes@edelman.com. And for any of those of you that like to send comments to Marketing Voices, you can do so at marketingvoices@podtech.net.
Hey, so, can I put out a shout for Edelman's own podcast?
Yes.
Yeah, Edelman, we have our own podcast, and I am the host, and you can get